come up on a tight wire.
I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Benjamin Alida Sainz couldn't be with us today, but we still have a great show for you. We have the first Chicano Poet Laureate of the State of California, Juan Felipe Herrera, who was also, by the way, the very first guest we've ever had on the show. He's going to join us and talk a little bit about what it's like to be the Poet Laureate of California. Can you imagine? You know what I was thinking? We need a Poet Laureate of El Paso. So far in Words on the Wire, we've had four Poet Laureates. We've had Philip Levine, who was a U.S. Poet Laureate. We've had Billy Collins, who was a former U.S. Poet Laureate. We've had Arthur Z, who was a Poet Laureate, the very first of Santa Fe. And today we're going to have the very first Chicano Poet Laureate of California, Juan Felipe Herrera. So, and I think we need a Poet Laureate in El Paso. You know, we have such a rich literary heritage. We have so many poets that come out of here. We need a Poet Laureate. And so please write your congressman, your mayor, your city councilman, write anyone who can get us a Poet Laureate. And I have a suggestion for the first one. You know who I think should be our first Poet Laureate? Benjamin Alida Sainz. Doesn't that make sense? Anyway, we have Juan Felipe Herrera. It's going to be good talking to him. And also on Poetic License, we have a former student of ours, got his bachelor's degree here at the University of Texas, El Paso, Paul Pedrosa, a writer who went off to get his MFA in the Midwest. And after getting his MFA, he came back to El Paso, back to the desert, back to Aztlan. And he's going to talk about that transition, coming back to El Paso after being in the Midwest for so long. Also, Words on a Wire is going to Harlem. Yes, Harlem, New York, on Saturday, October 20th at La Casa Azul Bookstore on 143 East 103rd Street. We will be doing a show from there. I will be reading from my fiction, and Sasha Pimentel Chacon, the poet and friend of Words on a Wire, will also be there. We're going to be reading, and we're going to be talking a little bit about the show, and we're going to do some live recording there. It should be a lot of fun. So come out and join us. If you want more information on that, you can find me, Daniel Chacon, on Facebook or Words on a Wire on Facebook, and there should be some information about that reading we'll do at La Casa Azul Bookstore. But come on down. If you're in New York, the producers of the event will be Marlena Fitzpatrick, who is a former MFA candidate. She graduated with her MFA online here with us at University of Texas, El Paso, and Gabriel Amor. And they have big plans for the evening. They're going to, among other things, hang wires on the ceiling, and people are going to pin words to it, and we're going to make our own poetry. It's going to be a big project. So come on down and check it out. Should be a lot of fun. Stick around with Juan Felipe Herrera. Juan Felipe Herrera is the son of migrant farm workers. He arrived at UC Riverside in 2005 as the Tomas Rivera Chair in Creative Writing. He earned his bachelor's degree from UCLA and his master's from Stanford and Iowa Writers' Workshop. He has published numerous volumes of poetry, prose, theater, children's books, and young adult novels, including Half of the World in Light, New and Selected Poems, which received the Penn Beyond Margins Award and National Book Critics Award. Elin Stevens says of Juan Felipe Herrera, "There is one constant over the past three decades in Chicano literature, and his name is Juan Felipe Herrera. Aesthetically, he leaps over so many canons that he winds up on the outer limits of urban song and spirituality. He is deep into the quest that we all must begin before it is too late." And he is the first Chicano ever to be Poet Laureate of the State of California. Wow. So how does it feel?
It feels good. You know, I feel good, you know, most of all because I have a kind of a wider audience to inspire and to work with and to come and bring everybody together as best as I can.
Yeah.
I've had mayors of cities asking me how they can help promoting the Unity Project, because part of the one of the projects I want to do is we're doing is creating the most incredible and biggest poem on unity in the world. And so where everybody submits a line or two lines or a whole poem, and we just stitch them all together. And it's a two-year-long project, so we're going to have the biggest poem on unity. And we're going to project it in as many ways as possible, you know, sing all it, right. dance it. The Sony mayors have been saying, hey, well, I'm here to help, and teachers and students, and a lot of people like that idea. So,
oh, it's a great idea. It's called The Most Incredible and Biggest and Most Amazing Poem on Unity in the World. And it's a two-year collaborative project. So can you tell us how you're going to get together this, what you call a rolling wave of poetry?
Well, you know, I'm just calling on people to submit one line or one phrase. Or two lines. It can be in any language, as long as it's translatable. And, you know, you can go to my Facebook, Juan Felipe Herrera, and put it in there, or you can go to a page I put in there called The Biggest and Most Incredible Poem on Unity in the World. And there's also a page in Facebook for that. And, or you could go to my website, JuanFelipePoet.com, and pop it in there. So I'll be collecting, you know, unity poets are going to help me harvest the unity poem. And then we're going to put them all together in a little unity workshop. And then we're going to punch them out into as many media forms as possible.
Wow, that sounds like an amazing project. It's kind of like the literary counterpart of a Christoph work of art. You know, it's humongous.
That's right.
And it's going to be like maybe even on the sides of the roads. You know, how are you going to choose which ones that you put and the order within which you put them and all that stuff?
Well, they all go. They all,
all of them get in.
There's no editing.
Oh, beautiful.
They all go in there, and in whatever form they come in and whatever order they come in, we may, you know, cut and paste a little because we have different, places where they're coming to. So they're all fold in, you know, like quesadillas. We just fold them in. Yeah, and then we're going to pop him up. But now that you said Christos, you know, I may give him a call, and maybe he wants to do a big old sarape.
That would be great.
Big old unity sarape, you know, going down the Empire State Building. That wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, projecting those words on the landscape somehow.
We want to project them, right, on digital screen. So get ready for that. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
What's wonderful is how you're turning the poet laureate position into more than just, it's not a symbol of Juan Felipe Herrera's poetry, although I think your poetry is beautiful and it deserves to be the voice of California. But you're turning it not into your poetry, but to the power of poetry. Can you tell us about the I Promise Joanna campaign you're working on as poet laureate?
I'm glad you brought that up. That's another part of it. I Promise Joanna is a letter or a poem that talks about a promise that students can make in elementary and high schools, in particular elementary and also middle schools, of course, all schools, about bullying, how they have been bullied or how they have been bullies, in a very personal letter to Joanna. And Joanna is Joanna Ramos. And Joanna Ramos was 11 years old here in Long Beach in California. And she got, you know, caught up in a fight with another girl and got punched. And they threw punch. I don't know how it happened. And she died, to make the story short.
Wow.
So when I saw her photograph on the news, you know, very beautiful, Chicanita, and sweet, and just full of life, and now gone because of this bullying incident. So I said, you know, let's keep her memory alive, and let's all make a promise to Joanna that we're not going to be bullied. We're not going to allow ourselves to become this thing that is a bullied person filled with pain, and not become the other person, which is a bullier, also the bully filled with pain. So here's a chance to make a promise and to put it on paper in a creative manner and then create an activist project, not beyond that person, for the school, for the community. So it could be an assembly, a song, a theater piece, or just a hall display or a presentation in the front of the classroom at any level, or at home, or at the community center in the neighborhood, where, you know, that student or that group of students says, yeah, this is our promise to Joanna, and this is what we said, and this is Joanna Ramos says, this is our experience, And we're here to promote a workshop, awareness performance, so that you all can know and help everyone and yourselves stop this from happening. That's the I Promise Joanna. And that's with poetry, you know. A letter, we can consider a letter a poem and put it into action for a cause, for young people to find a way creatively to stop the violence that's happening in their lives.
You know, bullying has always been with us, of course, but it seems lately that bullying has become, has gotten a lot more attention through viral videos and through through YouTube, through all kinds of different social media that exposes it for what it really is. And it also seems almost like the last stronghold for the bigot. By addressing that, you seem to really be, you know, addressing issues that have really kind of faced Chicanos and African Americans and gay and lesbians and, you know, so many different people have been affected by it. And so it seems like it's really going to be a powerful project.
It gets pretty deep, yes, you're right. I did a test run in one of my classes here at UC Riverside. And, a lesbian student, you know, undergrad, talked about her experience, you know, how she was bullied and how she felt. So even, you know, in an older level beyond, of course, beyond 12th grade, we all can do this, actually. We all can do this. And it's good to do it. Because then we kind of face our pain and we show others who we really, what we've really gone through. And then we can come together and start to heal and give a gift to others with our lives. And you're right about the bullying. It's gotten really bad. You know, even this is going to sound funny, and it is funny, and at the same time it's connected to what we're talking about. Even the presidential debate is about bullying, you know?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Romney got a lot of more points because he started to bully Obama, and now Obama is supposed to bully back. So bullying is at the center of our culture. It's so present that we forgot all about it.
We're talking to California Poet Laureate Juan Felipe Herrera, who was, by the way, the first ever guest on Words on a Wire, and so we're glad to have him back. I want to ask you now just as Juan Felipe, as Juan, not as California Poet Laureate, but as you. How did it feel when Jerry Brown named you as Folk Poet Laureate? Did he call you? Did you hear about it? Can you tell us about how that happened and how it felt?
You know, like everything else, right? It felt challenging to go right to the point of the question. It felt challenging. I was going to say that it took a lot of people to kind of get me to this point. As you know, you're one of them, people that inspired me and people that, you know, supported me. Without support, we can't go anywhere, you know, maybe 3 inches and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of people that are unnamed right now that taught me, that were great models, that just supported me in general, and we sat down and talked about poetry. Mm-hmm. You know, Victor Martinez and so many others. When I got nominated by Ralph Lewin and Lorna D. Cervantes and the California Arts Council and other beautiful people, the three nominations that were chosen out of all the nominations, one of them was mine.
Mm-hmm.
And then those got shipped up in a burrito to the governor's appointment desk. And at that appointment desk, the two great human beings there, Teresa Holloman and Mona Pasquil, looked at the material and called everybody, interviewed everybody on the phone,
mm-hmm.
and they interviewed me. They chose one, and they called me and said, "Hey," while I was driving in the freeway, you got the appointment. And then I went up. I happened to be at Sacramento judging the Poetry Recitation Champions of California.
Mm-hmm.
These are young people, high schoolers, that learn a poem by heart and compete in countywide, and then they win, become county champions of the recitation of poetry. And then they're invited, the winners, county winners, are invited to Sacramento to compete. Imagine a very complicated process against each other or for each other. And I was one of the judges there. Mm-hmm. And then so then I was called to go up to the governor's office and get sworn in.
Wow.
So I got up there and said, "Okay, he's here, the governor's here. Okay, Juan Felipe, come in here, the governor's here." So I went in there, and there he was. We shook hands, and he goes, it was like going passing an orals exam. Because he's a very sharp guy, you know, Jerry Brown. He's a very literary guy. And he immediately started talking about T.S. Eliot and The Wasteland. And he wanted me to comment on the meaning of The Wasteland and how it can be applied to society in the 21st century.
Oh,
because he saw that key poem of the 20th century as a comment on society at that point by a conservative poet, T.S. Eliot. So he said, okay, that's how it worked then. So how can that poem work for us now? Do you have an answer to that, Juan Felipe?
Oh, no. What did you say?
I said, you may be going too far. A poem is a poem, and it can be read in many ways in its own time. Its use or interpretations vary by second and by place and moment, and this is the 21st century. However, let me send you a book on that subject so you can read it. He wanted a book that dealt with that. So I sent him one of those top of the line, readers on one author.
You said literary theory?
Yeah, I forgot the name of the editions, but these are books that focus on one work or one author. Like there's one on Walt Whitman and the Leaves of Grass.
Right.
It's not a Cliff Notes book, but these are really good, you know. So Solomon Day, I sent it to him. I said, The Wasteland. Because he was interested in, as a governor, you know, which was very interesting. He wanted to use poetry in order to govern California in a more effective manner.
Yeah. You know, maybe what he needs to do is appoint a poet theorist, a state poet critic.
Yeah. I tell him to send you an invitation.
So, yeah, it's funny, you know, because I'm from California, and I've been living in El Paso, which is in the state of Texas.
Yeah, we can bring up El Paso. We have El Paso, California for a while.
When I, go back to California, to think that Jerry Brown is governor again, because when I was a kid, he was governor and he was dating Linda Ronstadt at the time, and the paparazzi was always following them around and trying to get pictures. Let's talk a little bit about your latest work. Last time we talked to you, Skate Fate had just come out. What do you have next? What's going to be coming out?
It's kind of two things. The immediate thing was last time we talked about that Cuca and Eva Aguirre project, the two star singers of the 30s.
In Juarez, right? Yeah,
Juarez, El Paso. They also sang and worked at El Colón, which, as you know, is a toy store right there in El Paso. Uh-huh. But one of the most famous movie theaters and performance salons in the Southwest. You know, so I was wondering how to write it. But in short, I put together a 30-minute piece just to have something to look at and also to present something that I thought would be a lot of fun. And I got sponsored by the Gluck program here at UCR.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, November 2nd, it's going to be on, and it's called Radio Vida Juarez Stars, The Lost Decade, Cuca Nueva Aguirre.
And this is a theatrical performance?
This is a poem, performance, a theater, song and dance, variedad. So it's one piece that weaves in and out of poetry, monologues based on the real interviews of Cuca Nueva Aguirre. And young people, undergraduates and from the community to all, young sprouts who are going to be singing and dancing and performing that story. This is The Lost Decade.
Are you going to record it on video and make it accessible nationwide, or do you have to go see it at this point?
You have to come and see it.
Okay.
It's November 2nd.
November 2nd.
6:30 p.m., University of California, Riverside, at the Dance Lab 166. And this is The Lost Decade. You know, there's no Chicano, Latino studies, or American studies, or historian, other than a couple that you have in El Paso, that know about the performance culture of 1932, 1942, Juarez, El Paso. No one knows that. We know about San Antonio, which is a big explosive performance cultural capital of our history during those years. We know that story, Narciso Martinez and Lidia Mendoza and the Duets and Trios, how Tejano and Tex-Mex music and Conjunto developed. We got that pretty well. But when you come to Juarez, El Paso, we know about it in our families, but we really don't know about who did what and who were the people. And there's a lot of good stuff that's been written just recently by Hector Noriega on the evolution of the Radio XJ, the most powerful radio station everybody still knows is still on, where Tintan emerged from, which was his main interest, Hector's main interest in his book, just came out this year. But we still don't know who were the singers, who were the dancers. He mentions them, but we really don't know their stories. And there's only two women. There were three women. One of them was Adelina Garcia, but she went to L.A. in 1937, became very well known from Juarez El Paso. But who stayed? Who kept on singing? They were poets. They were songwriters. They were actors. They were radio stars. And they were dancers. Who are they? Cuca Aguirre. And that's where this piece centers on.
Any chance you'll be touring that after the November 2nd premiere?
We can tour as long as we're sponsored by UTEP and the Department of Chicano Literary.
All right, you're here. I'll set up the theater now.
Okay, here's a little piece, and this is from Scene 20 at the Bronco Swap Meet, which is in El Paso. This is called the Bronco Swap Meet. Scene number 20, El Paso, 2010. This is Cuca Aguirre talking. I love how my sister Eva danced and laughed, and how she moved her tiny shoulders, how she sang and sang in front of thousands and bull rings and theaters on the other side of the radio wires, and every little brick and adobe house across La Colonia and Juarez. I love how we found a way to cross that border, singing and slipping into every casita and cantina and mercado en el barrio.
That was Juan Felipe Herrera, California Poet Laureate and good friend of Words on a Wire. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Daniel. You're all great, and keep up the great work.
Paul Pedrosa received his bachelor's degree in creative writing from the University of Texas, El Paso. And I know this is true because he was in many of my classes, and he was a brilliant young writer who went on to get his MFA in the Midwest. And he's going to talk a little bit about that. We're very glad to have a talented fiction writer on the show, Paul Pedrosa, with today's Poetic License.
My name is Paul Pedrosa. I was born and raised in El Paso, Texas. And before I moved away at the age of 25, I hadn't traveled much and rarely outside of the borderlands. I knew no other climate, terrain, or culture as intimately, so I knew that I was in for quite the experience as my partner Carol and I were going full immersion. I attended graduate school in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, followed by a year spent in Colonial Williamsburg, Virginia. In all, we spent 6 years away, a period that I initially described playfully as an exile until it began to feel organic. The experience changed my perception of myself as a writer and as a person, and although we were never sure whether we'd return, I became concerned with how those previous 25 years spent in the desert influenced my aesthetic and my method of understanding my world. The full immersion was never as powerful visually as during prairie winters. I remember riding buses out to the edge of town and looking out over the fallow cornfields. I never thought I'd see such flat land or the earth curve beyond the horizon, or so much snow obliterating all signs of plant and animal life, nothing but white everywhere, all the time. Coinciding with this was the way I had to adapt to workshops in my MFA program, often feeling like I have to defend what I write about, the poverty of the border, the grizzled characters who viciously guard their right to live, the rugged survivors who dare to blend two disparate languages into one dynamic tongue. In Illinois, I began to listen to the voice inside that said it's okay to write stories about the cities and neighborhoods back home that I'd finally begun to understand. Places quite unlike New York City that I'd once mistaken as requisite because they're fashionable and marketable. I've learned that it's okay to tell the stories that are true to desert dwellers, the rough, stark, yet true stories of a people determined to survive because nothing is guaranteed. As I continue to write, I discovered that the land itself has much to tell, and like Rufus Gomala, it has become a central character in many of my stories, an archaic rain parade that holds the city hostage to tradition, a town frustrated by failed industry, drives its people out so that it can finally rest alone, overgrown with weeds and creosote once again. In Illinois, I learned that being a writer can be a heavy yet rewarding responsibility to tell the true stories, the kind that are rarely heard in some ill-defined mainstream. This summer, Carol and I drove from Virginia to El Paso, a trip that required some 35 hours of driving. For most of the trip, I was numb by the job of navigating. But when we stopped at the visitor's center at the Guadalupe Mountains National Park and followed a short trail among the native plants, I began to feel a powerful sense of calm and belonging overcome me. Finally, I was home. It revived an internal dialogue I've entertained a good deal over the previous 6 years. Why is it that I've come to love living in the desert? It seems like a lot of border dwellers are casting their hopes on so-called paradises like Austin, Dallas, Los Angeles, even Chicago. I've come to terms with my difference because, having visited cities like Chicago and New York City, I've discovered that they're not for me. Too crowded, too sprawled, too loud. El Paso is balance. I can lose myself in the city or find real solitude amongst the mountains and foothills in a matter of minutes. The desert isn't a promise. This is no lush garden paradise. The desert is a test, the one that anyone willing can easily pass. And that's why things have changed for me. I understand what it's like to learn to find beauty in a harsh environment, and for that, I feel enriched. My time spent in exile has invested me with the responsibility to share this path of discovery and belonging with the greater world. Without these experiences, I wouldn't be the writer I am today and hope to become tomorrow.
That was Paul Pedrosa talking about coming back to the desert, coming back to Chuco. Thank you, Paul. I completely relate to that poetic license. Thank you for joining us for another edition of Words on a Wire. I'd like to thank our guest, the humble and the beautiful Juan Felipe Herrera, Poet Laureate of California. Thank you, Juan, for joining us again. I'd also like to thank Paul Pedrosa for his words on poetic license. And next week, we have a very exciting show for you. We have Denise DeHummel, and we'll be talking about her book, Ka-Ching, and I'll be doing the poetic license. So join us for another edition next week. I'm Daniel Chacon, and on behalf of Benjamin Alira Sainz, remember, the next book you read may save your life.
I'm up on a tight wire. One side's ice and one is fire. It's a circus game with you and me. I'm up on a tight rope. One side's hate and one is hope. But the top hat on my head is all you see. Wire seems to be the only place for me. A comedy of errors and I'm falling. Like a rubberneck giraffe, you look into my past. Well, maybe you're just too blind to see. I'm up in the spotlight. Oh, does it feel right? Well, the altitude seems to get to me. I'm up on a tight wire, flanked by life and the funeral pyre, putting on a show